Father, Lord, I just thank you for today. Thank you for the opportunity, Lord, to just for everyone to be here and just to hear your truth, Lord. I pray that we just come in with open hearts, open ears, Lord, that you would work through this, Lord, and just allow this to be a fruitful time. That, Lord, we would be able to hear your words spoken and that we would just walk away changed. Thank you so much, Father. In Jesus Christ's name we pray. Amen. All right. So, my name is Blake. I'm the youth pastor here. All right. And I've been working on what I'm going to speak about today for a little bit, and it's really intriguing concept to me because of how it all kind of works together, right? And it's something, at least for me, that I've not necessarily ever thought about a lot until I started to kind of look into it, and I was reading scripture, and things started to stand out, and I was like, okay, God, I didn't see what you're doing. I got to start writing, right? So, but first, I got a question for you guys, all right? Do we have any, like, avid readers in here, like, read a ton, love books, all that sort of stuff, right? There's, like, three people that read. The rest of you guys, I don't know what you're doing with your time. So when we go to the library, when we're looking for something to read or whatever, we always, right, they say not to judge a book by its cover, but we do exactly that. You walk through the library, and you always find, typically, the brightest colored book, at least for me, right, the one that has all the fancy writing on it. You find the one that stands out and looks good, right? Is anyone... Okay, of the three people in here that read, right? Has anyone picked out that book and then you look at the cover, you read the synopsis on the back, you go, this is going to be awesome. And like two chapters in, you're like, I've made a terrible mistake. Yeah, okay. So, yeah. So we've all been there, right? We've all been in that situation, okay? What about if we've done that with books, right? I know for a fact almost everyone in here has done that with a person or a situation in their life, right? You look at a person, you look at something happening, and you get the entirely wrong image, and you end up just being dead wrong, right? You end up finding out what you thought, what the truth was, completely different, right? The crazy part about that is we all do it. Even if you don't want to admit to yourself you do it. We all do, because we all have preconceived conceptions and notions of who people should be, what people should do, all sorts of stuff like that, right? And the very crazy part is we do it, just like with books, off of just one glance. We look at a person one time, we get one image in our head, and that's just it. That's what it is. And a lot of times, right, when it comes to meeting someone for the first time, there's one very important point of contact. It's the first point of physical contact we usually have with someone. That's a handshake, right? You can tell a lot about a person by their handshake. Right, especially guys, right? Like we're taught, like, hey, don't dead fish it. Don't walk in and go, hello, it's nice to meet you. Right? You go in, you go firm, and we also know the guys that go in and they go in a little too firm. Right? They go in there like, yeah, it's nice to meet you, and you're like, I don't know why you did that. There's no point. Right? But the crazy part is our hands can tell a lot about a person. Right? Now I'm going to talk to the ladies. If you show up to a date, right, or a guy, and he's got like dirt under his fingernails and his hands are like covered in like some sort of weird green ooze that we're not even sure. Yeah, I got my teens up front, they're going like, right? We can judge a lot about someone by just their hands even, right? It gives us a snapshot of their lives, who they are. It gives us an idea of what they're about, what they believe. And it gives us just a little bit of insight, right? So I got a few images for you guys, right? So the first one here, okay? Look at this guy's hands. When you see that, what's the first thing that comes to mind? A boxer, right? A fighter. These are the hands of someone who's a boxer. Maybe he's MMA, UFC, we don't entirely know. But you see this guy and go, he's a fighter, right? Okay, the next one. What do we think of when we see this? Anyone? A nurse. That's exactly what I had in my mind. A doctor, right? Soft, delicate hands because they have to do soft, delicate work sometimes. If you walk in to get your, because you're about to have like heart surgery and you see the first guy's hands, you're going, I don't know what he just did, but I don't want that, right? And then I got one more image for you guys. It's the last one. What about this one? Mechanic, right? Maybe works on, I think I heard oil rig or something like that. This guy gets dirty, he gets in the mud, he gets in the muck, right? Now, me growing up, I was used to these hands from my dad, because my dad has been a mechanic my whole life. So that, for me, like, this is almost comforting when I see that. I'm like, okay, we're going to get along because I know who you are, right? Our hands, in a lot of ways are one of the most important parts of our body. Think about in an average day, the number of crazy things you do with just your hands alone. They help us eat, work, play, and honestly, they help us survive. God even commanded the very first man, Adam, to use his hands to work the earth, to tend the garden. And if we're being entirely honest, hands are one of the few things that keep us on the top of the food chain because we have opposable thumbs, right? Any like hunters in here, right? How much more terrifying would hunting be if you knew the deer could shoot back? Okay, they got hooves, they don't have opposable thumbs, so I think we're good for a while, okay? And the crazy part is when I was thinking about this, I had a conversation, I think it was Trent the other day, and we were talking about, I grew up in the outdoors a lot, and we were talking about how, like, a lot of times growing up fishing, right, most of your food you brought with you fishing ended up tasting like fish halfway through the day, right, because you're fishing, you're catching fish, you're taking everything off, you're pulling off weeds and all this stuff, and then you go to eat your sandwich, and it's got a little bit of that lake water taste. That's how you know it's been a good day, right? But it took me back to one day specifically I remember in my life, and this is part of kind of this whole thing, is I remember I woke up that morning, me and my dad, we went fishing, right? My go-to snack when we went fishing was always some Pop-Tarts. I'm going to give you guys, I love s'mores Pop-Tarts. S'mores Pop-Tarts soaked in lake water, not the greatest, just FYI, okay? But I remember this. So we were fishing. You know, I grew up a bass fisherman, right? So as you're taking bass off, their lips are a little rough. So by the end of the day, you get what a lot of people call fisherman's thumb. It's almost like you took your thumb to sandpaper, right? It's what it looks like. So I had that, and I was eating my Pop-Tarts, and it was tasting like fish. Not a great taste, okay? So I did that, and I remember we went home. I had to do my chores, right? I was cleaning the bathroom, taking out the trash, doing dishes. Then, because it was like late spring, early summer, I went out back, pulled out the target, pulled out my bow, was practicing my archery. You know, deer season at that point was like 3 months away. I was like, got to get ready now. So I was shooting my bow. Then I had baseball practice, right? I had to go catching, throwing, hitting, sliding, fielding, all with my hands. Then got to go home. You got to shower. You got to clean up. Then I'm eating dinner, playing video games, right? And then there's so much more. That was just one day. That's what my hands did in one day, and who knows what else. Right, those are just the things I remember. And even with our hands, we use them to express ourselves. We use them to emote, to show our emotions. Right, you're having a good day, you give a thumbs up or an okay sign. You're having a not-so-day, you can throw up some other fingers. But, right, we use our hands to tell us and show others when we're feeling good, bad, angry. So many different emotions. And even crazier is there are certain, like, hand gestures that are recognizable and almost, like, immortalized because of their popularity. Right? Like I said, you got certain ones we all know. Thumbs up, okay. Any wrestling fans in here, like WWE fans? Yeah, right? You got Too Sweet, right? Yeah, you got stuff like that. There's all sorts of stuff. Football, you know, right? You got Aaron Rodgers, discount double check, right? You got one of those things. There's all sorts of different motions that we've attached our hands to. There's entire languages. Right? There's sign language and all sorts of stuff. And so the thing is, just like with the pictures you guys saw earlier with the hands we have and what we do with them often end up being a part of who we are and describe us. Our hands tell our story. And so today, what I wanted to talk about was God's hands. If the hands tell our story, then what does the story of God's hands tell? What does his story say? What do his hands look like? And so we're going to start with a pretty common verse. But for me, the last sort of part of it really stood out because this idea of hands was just on my mind, right? So we're gonna go back to Isaiah 41, verse 10. And a lot of us have probably heard this at one point or another. But it says, "Do not fear, for I am with you. Do not be afraid, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. I will help you. I will hold on to you with my righteous right hand." Other versions will say, "I'll uplift you. I'll lift you up with my righteous right hand." I can't tell you how many times I've seen this verse or read it or whatever. And I think the thought behind it is good, but how often have you actually thought about, how many times do we actually focus on that last part? God doesn't just pick us up and dangle us and leave us. Maybe we'll hold on if our shirt doesn't rip. Right? He picks us up by our collar. He doesn't just brush us off or brush past us, or just give us a pat on the shoulder. He picks us up and he holds on to us. He says, I will hold on to you with my righteous right hand. We don't hold on to things in life that aren't important to us. Right? If you're dangling off a cliff, holding on to that rope is going to be a lot more important than when the rope's sitting in your garage and you're trying to pick it up. We find out who and what are important to us through the hard times. So recently, give you guys a little bit of an update as far as where I've been. Yesterday was my birthday. And yeah, thank you. I wasn't gonna put this part in here, but I was thinking about it. I think it's important because it really kind of hit me. I was even talking to the worship team this morning about this. As I get a little bit older, like every year, it's funny how the number of birthday messages slowly begin to drop. It's funny how much later in the day they come. It's funny how certain people just don't say anything anymore. That's one thing for me I've really been struggling with, is there are very good friends of mine that, you know, from high school and or whatever, that like I didn't even hear from. You know, like we were close, like we went through some crazy stuff together. And I still love them, and you know, if I part of me hopes that they feel the same way, but I know that if they called and they're like, hey, like I need you now, like I would probably drop just about it, everything and go. And I hope they feel the same, but there's that part of me that realized that things change and they've held on to what's important to them. For some of them, that's a house, a wife, a car, cars. Who knows? They've found what's important to them and they've held on to that. We have hands, but we only have two of them. We can only hold on to so many things. And see, with me, my problem is I try to hold on to everything. Everything. Everything and everyone. And so what ends up happening is as I'm trying to hold on to a million different ropes, they start slipping. They start sliding. You can only hold on to so many things before the others begin to let go. And so a little bit later in Isaiah, we're going to get to this in a second, but God goes a step further. Because remember, he told us, I'm holding on to you because we're important to him, right? You hold on to the things that's important to you. So then in Isaiah 49, verse 16, God says this. Look, I have inscribed you on the palms of my hands. Your walls are continually before me. So God goes a step further and says, no, you don't understand. I'm not just holding on to you. You're engraved. You're inscribed. It's a step further. We as humans can't even understand what that actually means. Closest thing we have, right, if you really think about it, are statues, carvings, things of that nature. Think about, like, I think about, like, the old, you know, like Greek carvings. You ever seen the details in some of those? If you haven't, you should look it up. It's crazy. There's one I remember in particular of a woman wearing a veil. And remember, this is a stone carving. And you can see the features of her as if you're peering through a thin veil. It's crazy what they could do. Think about that. God said he loves you so much, he's going a step further than to just hold you, but he has you engraved. Engraved in a way that you're never going to be able to be removed. Engraved in a way that no one can come along and just scrape you off. That no matter what you do, you're never going to get out of that. The book of Isaiah was God talking to his people. The book of Isaiah can be kind of scary, because I read it at one point. I read about half of it, and I started to be like, man, this is kind of dark stuff. It can be, right? Because it's God going to his people and saying, hey, y'all are jacking around doing this dumb stuff. You're going to get what you deserve. But then he tells them this too. He goes, hey, you're my people though. You're here. You may be trying to wiggle free and get out, but you ain't going nowhere. When we're engraved, when something's engraved, it's not easily scratched out. It's not easily removed. And that's God's hands, right? God's hands have a hold of us and have us engraved. That's God. So when we talk about what do hands mean, that's what God's hands are. You, your name, you are engraved into his palms. Which, when you really think about what Jesus did, is even crazier. What we did to him. Now, the cool part about the Old Testament and then going to the New Testament is all of the stuff that God promises, all the stuff that God says in the Old Testament is fulfilled in one way or another in the New Testament. And so when I was reading this, I started, like I said, I was studying through some of Isaiah, and this idea of hands came up a few times. Then I jumped to the New Testament, was reading through the Gospels, and then in the book of John, so this is Jesus speaking, so this is John chapter 10. And this is what Jesus tells them. I give them eternal life, and they will never perish ever. No one will snatch them out of my hand. My Father, who has given them to me, is greater than all. No one is able to snatch them out of the Father's hand. The Father and I are one. So remember, God tells his people in Isaiah, I'm never going to let go of you. You're engraved. Jesus tells his people, the disciples and the people he's preaching to at this time, hey, I got you. And that's important because we see another part of the Old Testament fulfilled here by Jesus. And he reminds them, hey, God the Father says this, I got you. If we both got you, I am the Father and I are one. Jesus confirms who he is and confirms that he would uphold us and inscribe us in his hands. Here's the thing about Jesus' hands. They looked a lot different than what we think. Jesus' hands, if we go to those three pictures, right? Jesus' hands weren't the nice, clean doctor looking ones. They weren't. Right? I think a lot of times we forget Jesus was a carpenter. Jesus grew up working. Jesus grew up plowing the fields. Jesus grew up doing those things. But those hands, right? Those hands that did all of those things, those hands that were probably bruised and dirty, right? They traveled all the time. Those are the same hands that had nails driven through them, and the same ones were told will grab hold of us and never let us go. Those are the same hands. The same hands that in John 2, he tells us they turned water to wine. Those same hands in John chapter 4 and chapter 5, he heals the sick. In John chapter 6, those hands feed 5,000 people with a little bit of bread and a couple of fish. A little bit later in John chapter 6, those hands are the ones that calm the storm while he's walking on water. In John 9, those hands pick up mud that he had spit in the dirt to make mud and wipe them on a blind man's eyes. Man that had been blind since death or since birth was cured of his blindness. And in John chapter 11, before Jesus goes to the cross, those hands bring a dead man to life. It's the story of Lazarus. Those hands did all of that. Those hands that have your name on them were the ones that did that. The hands that had your name on them were the ones that hold on to you and then had nails driven through them. And the even crazier part about that hand is no matter how many times we try to slap them away or scratch our name off of them, no matter how many times we try to do that, those hands never leave you. When you've fallen down, when you've fallen, when you've sinned, when you try to run away, when you try to wiggle free, when you try to get loose, those hands never move. They're waiting for us to grab hold, get up, and keep walking. Those hands are waiting for us to accept that what we need at the end of the day is help and a way to be made whole again. Jesus worked and toiled away with those hands, sowing fields, both literally and figuratively, healing the sick, feeding the poor, curing the blind, hugging the lepers. Those hands did all that good work. And at the end of the day, what did we do? Those hands were nailed to a cross and killed for the good works and for loving others. And then there's another story that I think is very interesting. We have the story of the bleeding woman. She had fought through crowds. She fought through who knows how many hundreds, thousands of people as they were crowded around Jesus. She fought her way through just to get a single hand, a single finger on the hem of Jesus' robe. Because she believed enough that if all she could do was just touch his clothes, that she would be healed. And she was. All she had to do was just believe what her hands could do. Her hands healed her not because of what she did, but because of her faith. The crazy part is we have that same power all the time. That power that cured the bleeding woman, that raised the dead to life. We have that. Yet we constantly complain with the slightest inconvenience, slightest sickness, anything else. We go, well, there's no possible way. I guess God just hates me. God doesn't want me to live a joyful life. And that's coming from me. That's where I struggle. I try to do everything with my own hands. We don't need to do it with our own hands. The power doesn't come from ours. The power doesn't come from our hands, but from whose hands have a hold of us. We constantly try to take the power out of his hands and take the power into our own. And there's an old saying, right? Because then if we're not trying to do stuff with our hands, right, our hands go idle. Right? There's an old saying, what? Idle hands are the devil's playground. And so one of the big things that I've thought about a lot, wrote about it a lot in my journals and a lot of other things, is the hands of Jesus were not idle. The hands of Jesus were not perfectly clean. The hands of Jesus were dirty and constantly working. Jesus lived a perfect life, but that didn't stop from what he was doing. Jesus touched the leper. That's a concept that I don't know if we fully understand. We don't fully understand what that would be. This man had gross lesions and boils and things all over his body. You didn't even get within probably 10 feet of him. Jesus went up and touched him. If we want to be like Jesus, we have to find the ways that our hands are going idle and look for ways and opportunities to do the dirty work, not for us, but for the kingdom. There are people out there. There are people in this city, in this county, that no other church is going to, no other Christian has probably seen or gone to. And I guarantee you, most of us in here, when I say that, even has an image of maybe not an exact person, but the type of person. What's the type of person you go, oh, I can't do that. My hands are going to get too dirty. I can't go there. What if someone sees me and they see the mud on my hands? That is where Jesus went. Our call as Christians is not to stay clean up on our high horses in the ivory tower watching over the lands as everyone else toils. And we are called to go. We need to look for ways to get dirty in this world. And I don't mean dirty in the sense of going into sin. We shouldn't do that. Don't go get dirty for the sake of getting dirty. If there's an alcoholic, I'm not going to take them to a bar and go buy drinks for them so I can teach them about Jesus. I may go to the bar with them and tell them about Jesus, but I'm not going to get that dirty with them. I'm going to go with them, pick them up, and bring them here. There's a really crazy verse that, for me, I hadn't heard until probably the last couple of years was the first time I'd ever heard it. I had probably read it at some point, but I had never let it actually sink in. This isn't going to be up on the screens, but it's in Matthew. And Matthew writes, "From the days of John the Baptist until now, the kingdom of heaven has been suffering violence, and the violent have been seizing it by force." If you want to be a part of the kingdom, there's going to be times you're going to have to fight. There's going to be times you're going to have to get dirty. The more idle your hands are, the farther away from the kingdom you truly are, because that's not who we're called to be. Jesus went to those that no one else went to because they were dirty or gross or whatever else reason. So this idea that the same hands that Jesus had that touched the leper, the same hands that Jesus had that healed and did miracles, were the ones that we nailed to a cross. Because every single day that we live, and we're not living for him in a way that promotes kingdom work, that continues to expand the kingdom and allows us to spread the gospel, every day that we don't do that, we're driving the nail in. Those hands that he showed the disciples when he came back to life were important, because he showed to them what we had done. It says that he showed them, you know, they were concerned that Jesus was a spirit, or maybe it wasn't who he said he was. So he shows them his hands, right? And they see the holes. But what if Jesus showed them that to show, this is what you did? There are so many things that happen in the Bible that we're never going to be able to fully understand or fully comprehend, because we didn't get to actually visually see it. We didn't get to see Jesus hung on a cross. We didn't get to see Lazarus raised from the dead. But if you believe that the same God who etched your name in his hands was the same God that did that, we don't have to see it. The bleeding woman probably hadn't seen a miracle up until that point. She wasn't allowed in the cities or around people. There's no way she had seen the miracles Jesus had done, but she believed from what she had heard that just by touching his robes, her hands, all she needed to do was just touch his robes, and she would be healed, and she was. The hands of Jesus are waiting. So Mandy's going to come up and play some music. I know it's not a super long message today, but I don't know if there's much more here. The hands of Jesus are waiting. Your name's already there. He's already chosen you. He's already picked you to be a part of the kingdom. You have to decide what you're going to do. Because Jesus hasn't gone anywhere. He hasn't moved across the street, across the state. Jesus hasn't moved. Doesn't matter where you're at. If you're in the mud right now and you feel like you're the gross leper, or you feel like you can't touch the gross leper, or whatever that is, wherever you're at, Jesus is still right there with you with an outstretched hand, saying, I've already wrote your name. I've already got a hold of you. What are you going to do about it? Because we have two choices. You have two choices. You can go, no, I don't need you. And you can smack the hand away again and again and again and remain in the mud and remain in the dirt. Or you can accept who Jesus has called you to be and what he's done for you and grab his hand, get up, and keep walking. His hands are waiting. The crazy part is, Jesus came. God came down in the form of man to show us his hands, to show us what the hand of God actually does. It's to love, serve, honor. That's what the hands of God does. Jesus came and lived a perfect life. And Jesus existed. Jesus of Nazareth was a for real man. The Roman historians that hate Christianity can't deny the fact that Jesus of Nazareth was real. He lived a perfect life. And then because of the amazing things he did, his hands got dirty, his hands got nailed to the cross, and his nails got bloody because of us. Because of the sin we commit every day, we drive a nail in deeper into the hands that wants to love you and help you. Every single day, we do that. But the crazy part is, even though we are the reason the nails were driven into him, he also did it for us. What kind of God would allow us to drive nails into his hands because it's better for us? When Jesus died on that cross, when we did that to him, when the nails were driven in and he died, something miraculous happened. Absolutely miraculous. In that moment, all the grossness that is in our lives, the sin in our lives, was taken away from us and we were given an opportunity. Jesus offers us the opportunity to no longer have to be the leper, no longer have to be whatever it is that we are or we think we are, but to be who we truly are, which is sons and daughters of God, kings and queens. And when he died in that moment, he rose again, something crazy happened. He took that grossness on his shoulders when we drove the nails in, and he offered us a perfect life. He offered us his perfect life. Because the only way to be in relationship with God, the only way to make it truly into heaven, into the kingdom, is you have to be perfectly righteous and holy just as God is. That's the expectation. But we're never going to meet it. None of us ever will. And in that moment, what God did is said, I love you, and he reached a hand out. All we have to do is grab a hold of that hand and say, God, I needed help. I can't do this on my own. My hands are dirty and filthy, bloody. He says, I know, but I've done all these things. These hands have done terrible things, God. You don't know the things these hands have done. He goes, I know. You don't know the things these hands are going to do. What if I do something worse? What if these hands do something worse down the road? He goes, I know. He already knows, and he has known, and he will know. He loves you so much that he reached his hand out and says, you don't have to worry about what your hands have done. And then, we have the story of the adulterous woman. She's about to be stoned to death. Jesus came, puts a hand on her. You know what that hand does? Lifts her up. But it doesn't stop there. He says, now go and sin no more. When we accept Christ, something crazy happens in us. Can't explain it. It's the Holy Spirit. It's the hand of God coming on you. So it doesn't matter where you've been, what you've done, what you're going to do. God already knows. So today, you're going to have an opportunity. You're going to have an opportunity. You can sit there, and you can stay where you're at, in the mud, with your dirty, broken hands. Or you can look up and say, God, I need you. I'm sorry. I need help. Because when you do that, he says, I know. I've already forgiven you. I love you. He's going to lift you up, and he's going to hold you there, never to be let go. That's how much he loves you. There's going to be people up here that are willing to pray with you and for you, even if you don't know what you need prayer for. He also tells us that he understands our grumblings, that he interprets our moans and our grumblings. You may not have the words, but you have that feeling. There's people up here that are willing to pray with you and for you. And if you're ready today to make that commitment to say, God, I don't know what to do. I'm sorry. I need help. Come forward and we would love to pray with you. All you have to do, don't let your hands stay idle. Reach out, find God, and fight for your spot in the kingdom. We say it every week, and it's true. you have a choice. You can leave here the same as you walked in, completely unchanged. But if you're doing that, it's because you're choosing to do so.